And as we heard yesterday, amazingly enough, the great Adbhuta Kamana, the great performer of astonishing activities, wonderful activities, Krishna himself was unable to convince Yudhisthira that there was no fault on his part. And the reason was, and also, as we heard, other great sages also tried to convince Yudhisthira, but no one could convince him. And there was an important reason. Krishna had a plan. And what was that plan? What was Krishna's plan? Krishna wanted his pure devotee Bhishma to convince Yudhisthira, although he himself was unable. And also, Krishna wanted to bring the Pandavas before Yudhisthira, before Bhishma Dev, because Bhishma Dev was just about to die, and this would soothe his heart. And to see Yudhisthira as king, finally, would make Bhishma Dev peaceful, and thus he would be able to pass through this from this world as he was dying, passing to the next world, very peacefully. And also, Krishna himself wanted to be present before Bhishma Dev as Bhishma Dev was left this world. For these reasons, Krishna arranged that Yudhisthira Maharaj be brought before Bhishma Dev to receive instructions from him. And the instructions he's going to receive, as well as the words that will come from Bhishma Dev's mouth glorifying Krishna, are very wonderful and instructive to all of us. So many gems and jewels are hidden within this chapter. So, Suta Goswami was speaking. Who was he speaking to? Shaunaka Rishi and the sages of Namasharanya. So he said, being afraid for having killed so many subjects on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, Maharaj Yudhisthira went to the scene of the massacre. There, Bhishma Dev was lying on a bed of arrows about to pass away. Who's seen that place? How many of the devotees have seen that place? Yes, there's a kund there. What is it called? Bhishma kund or something? There's a kund there because Bhishma Dev was thirsty. Arjuna shot an arrow into the ground, bringing forth Mother Ganges to quench the thirst of Bhishma Dev. And the Ganga Mata was truly the mother of Bhishma Dev, actually the mother of Bhishma Dev. So Bhishma Dev was lying on a bed of arrows. His body had been pierced so many times by arrows, and yet he did not die, because he had a benediction that he did not have to leave his body in any other way except by his own will, by his own volition, by his own desire. So he was waiting for something, and we'll hear what he was waiting for. And of course, all this was the will of the Lord. At that time, all his brothers followed him. Now, this was Yudhisthira went to the scene of the massacre to Kurukshetra. And at that time, all his brothers followed him on beautiful chariots drawn by first-class horses decorated with gold ornaments. With them were Vyas and rishis like Dumya, the learned priest of the Pandavas, and others. O sage amongst the Brahmanas, Lord Sri Krishna, the personality of Godhead, also followed, seated on a chariot with Arjuna. So now the battle was over, and Krishna was no longer Parthasarathi. He was no longer the chariot driver of Arjuna, but he was seated next to Arjuna on the chariot. Thus, King Yudhisthira appeared very aristocratic, like Kuvera surrounded by his companions. Purport. Lord Sri Krishna wanted the Pandavas to be present before Bhishma Dev in the most aristocratic order so that he might be pleased to see them happy to see the Pandavas happy at the time of his death. So Yudhisthira is compared to Kuvera, the richest of the demigods, because the procession led by Yudhisthira to see dying Bhishma Dev was so opulent and rich it was comparable to Kuvera. And in this way, Bhishma Dev's mind would become pacified to see the kingly riches of Yudhisthira finally. They who had lived by begging, even though they were the most exalted personalities, they who had been forced to live in the forest and moving from one place to another, and they who had been insulted in so many ways and sent exiled out of their own kingdom, were now reestablished as the most opulent kings. And this would cheer the heart of Bhishma Dev. So Krishna made this arrangement. See how Krishna is dealing with his devotees. So seeing him, so the Pandavas arrived at a very, very, very sad scene. They saw their beloved uncle pierced with arrows preparing to die, and he was lying on the ground like a demigod fallen from the sky. The Pandava, King Yudhisthira, along with his younger brothers and Lord Krishna, bowed down before him. So who bowed down before Bhishma Dev? Because Krishna, this is Naralila. Krishna's acting as a human being, as if a human being, although he is never Manushyam Tanamashrita. He's assumed a human-like form, but he's the Supreme Lord. And out of affection, he is bowing down as if he is one of the younger brothers of Maharaj Yudhisthira. Just to see, this is text 5, the chief of the descendants of King Bharat, all the great souls of the universe, in the universe, namely the rishis amongst the demigods. Who is the rishi amongst the demigods? Narada. Does anyone know a verse where he's called that? Surishina bhagavat grihitam soham kritam nu vrishraje tavabritya se verse. Huh? No. It's in Prahlad. Prahlad sees that. Says that, rather. He says that. He says, after this, Surishi, the Rishi, Sura Rishi, the Rishi amongst the demigods has saved me. So ham kitam nu risaje tavabritya seva. How could I give up his service? I was heading like everyone else in this world, following everyone else into a great ditch, a blind well, towards my death, and yet this personality, this Sura Rishi, has saved me. So just to see the descendant, the chief of the descendants of Bharata, all the Rishis amongst the demigods, the Brahmanas and the kings, all situated in the quality of goodness, were assembled there. So many great, great sages, and they're going to be listed right next, came to see Bhishma Dev as he passed away. They wanted to encourage him. The same thing happened with Maharaj Prickett. When he was leaving, so many great devotees and sages and rishis and munis came to have his association and to give him strength at the time of death, at the time of his passing away. Because that is the most difficult time. Because we can't even estimate now how difficult it is. Why? Because our body is completely disrupted. There's so much pain. And it will be described in one purport that everything we've learned in our life will be tested at that time. And Prabhupada gives a very famous example, like flying a plane alone. We can get so many instructions on the ground, but when we're in the air, piloting this plane, who will we get to help us? We have to have assimilated and applied what we have learned. So we can go through our life happily, taking Krishna consciousness sort of seriously, and getting attached to this and enjoying that. But at the end, in this most difficult of times, at the time of death, how seriously we have become attached to Krishna will be our only wealth. That is the only wealth, truly, because that, as Prabhu said yesterday, depending upon the only one who is really dependable. And Narottama Das Thakur describes in his Prem Bhakti Sanjika that a devotee will call out to Krishna at that time. So the sages, all knowing that Bhishma Dev, this great soul, was leaving, they came to get his association and also to give association. So who came? All the sages like Parvat Muni, Nara, Dhomya, Vyas, who's the incarnation of God, Brihadasva, Bharadwaj, Parsaram, and disciples, Vashishta, Indra Pramad, Trita, Grishamad, Asita, Kakshivan, Gautam, Atri, Kaushika, and Sudarshan were present. And Prabhupada, in his purports, he describes who these individual sages were and some of their histories. Plus, Anye Cha Munayo Brahman, and many others, like Sukadev Goswami, who is called, in the verse, he is called Brahmartha, Brahma Artha, like Maharaj Prickett is called Vishnu Artha. So, what does Brahma Artha mean? What does Vishnu Artha mean, the name of Maharaj Prickett? Anyone know? Prabhupada named one of his early disciples Vishnu Artha, one who was protected by Lord Vishnu. And Maharaj Prickett was protected, always is protected by Lord Vishnu, within the womb even. But how is Sukadev Goswami Brahma Artha? He's protected by the greatest, because he wouldn't come out of the womb until Krishna promised him that he himself would protect him, that he wouldn't fall into Maya. So Sukadev Goswami and other purified souls, Kasyapa, Angirasa, and others, all accompanied by their respective disciples, arrived there. So everyone was surrounding Bhishma Dev. Bhishma Dev, who was the best amongst the eight Vasus, received and welcomed all the great and powerful rishis who were assembled there. For he knew perfectly all the religious principles according to time and place. He was an expert religionist. And an expert is one who is able to take a principle and adjust it exactly and properly according to the current circumstances. So Bhishma Dev was in the most awkward of positions. His body was pierced with arrows, yet he satisfied everyone as the host, because they were coming to see him. With his sweet words, sweet and heartfelt words, because he couldn't get up and offer them even a drink or something to eat or a sitting place, because he was close to death. But at least he was able, by Krishna's grace, to offer sweet words. Lord Sri Krishna is situated in everyone's heart. Yet, he manifests his transcendental form by his internal potency. This very Lord was sitting before Bhishma Dev, and since Bhishma Dev knew of his glories, he worshipped him duly. Krishnam chatat prabhavagya asinam jagadishwara. This prabhavagya means that he knew, Krishna, or Bhishma knew who was sitting before him. There were so many sages, but Krishna, who is Jagadishwar, he was sitting before him. He knew Krishna's glories. Krishnam chatat prabhavagya. He knew who Krishna was, who had come to see him. He understood Krishna's position. The sons of Maharaj Pandu was sitting silently nearby. Why? were they silent? Because that person who had been their shelter during their youth, they had so much affection for him, they were sitting before their dying grandfather. Seeing this, Bhishma Dev congratulated them with feeling. There were tears of ecstasy in his eyes, for he was overwhelmed by love and affection. He too was experiencing, he was reciprocating. They loved him and he loved them. Prabhupada's purport. When Maharaj Pandu died, his sons were all small children. And naturally, they were brought up under the affection of elderly members of the royal family, specifically by Bhishma Dev. Later on, when the Pandavas were grown up, they were cheated by cunning Duryodhana and company. And Bhishma Dev, although he knew that the Pandavas were innocent and were unnecessarily put into trouble, he could not take the side of the Pandavas for political reasons. At the last stage of his life, when Bhishma Dev saw his most exalted grandsons headed by Maharaj Yudhisthira sitting very gently at his side, the great warrior grandfather could not check his loving tears, which were automatically flowing from his eyes. He was a warrior. Warriors are not at all sentimentalists. They have to kill. He had to take the other side against the Pandavas, yet his heart was so moved and touched that tears were flowing from his eyes automatically. He remembered the great tribulation suffered by his most pious grandsons. He was also crying because he saw them now finally triumphant. Now finally Yudhisthira was the king after having undergone so much tribulation, and that brought so much happiness to his eyes also, and he was crying on that account too. Certainly he was the most satisfied man because of Yudhisthira's being enthroned in place of Duryodhana, and thus he began to congratulate them. Now Prabhupada's purport, even before we read this verse, text 12, Prabhupada's purport to text 12 explains that Bhishma Dev knew the great anxiety that Yudhisthira was feeling. Why was Yudhisthira feeling anxious and miserable? Why? And very unfortunate. And why else? So he felt bad. Yes. Why else? Yes, and he was fearing the reactions for that too. And culture had been disrupted. So such a heavy weight he was carrying. So Bhishma Dev knew that. He was thinking, or Yudhisthira was thinking, all this has been done to enthrone me. Such selfishness. Such selfishness. And because of my selfishness, so many people have been killed. Because of my huge ego, so many people have been killed, and misfortune has befallen millions of people. So Bhishma Dev knew this, so therefore he spoke in a special way to Yudhisthira, because already he was going to begin to remove his misconception of and his grief and his lamentation. And this is just the beginning. I'll read the verse, but pay attention to this purport, and something very similar is going to be echoed in the purport to text 14. Because in these instructions of Srila Prabhupada explaining the instructions of explaining Bhishma's words to Yudhisthira, Prabhupada is going to advise us how we can make sure that we are acting appropriately in all circumstances. These two purports will do that, 12 and 14. It will give us guidance so that we know that we are acting appropriately or how we can act appropriately so that we never have to lament, regardless of the result. There may be a terrible result, which happened in the case of Yudhisthira Maharaj. But regardless, if we follow these instructions, we are situated properly and we have nothing to worry about. So we'll read those. Perhaps I'll read a few of the verses and then I'll be able to read. I'll read up to 14 and then we'll read both purports so we get them both at the same time. So Bhishma Dev said in 12, "Oh, what terrible sufferings and what terrible injustices you good souls suffered for being the sons of religion personified. You did not deserve to remain alive under those tribulations, yet you were protected by the Brahmanas, God, and religion. As far as my daughter-in-law Kunti is concerned, upon the great general Pandu's death, she became a widow with many children, and therefore she suffered greatly. And when you were grown up, she suffered a great deal also because of your actions." And the last line of Prabhupada's purport speaking about Kunti Devi is very important for us as well. He says, this means that she, Kunti, even though she was so pious, she was destined to suffer by providence. And this one has to tolerate without being disturbed. There'll be more on this point later. Suffering comes. What to do? Well, exactly what to do will be explained. The next verse, this is Bhishma Dev speaking. 14. In my opinion, and this is the first of the four instructions, special instructions that Bhishma gives to Yudhisthira Maharaj. In my opinion, this is all that you have gone through is due to inevitable time, under whose control everyone in every planet is carried, just as the clouds are carried by the wind. Now we'll read the purport to 12. First, we will hear how to act or what guidance we should use, because this comes up all the time. Krishna or Arjuna had Krishna directly before him to tell him to fight. And Prabhupada explains that if one has Krishna, if one acts according to the instructions of his spiritual master, it's the same as acting according to the instructions of Krishna. But yet, very often we find in our lives that we're in situations where we're not sure how to act. We want to act properly, but we are not sure what we should do. Should we turn left? Should we turn right? Should we continue? Should we stop? So here is, in these two verses, or the two purports, there'll be some guidelines that I think are extremely helpful. So here is the Prabhupada's purport to 12. Maharaj Yudhisthira was disturbed due to the great massacre in the Battle of Kurukshetra. Bhishma Dev could understand this, and therefore he spoke first of the terrible sufferings of Maharaj Yudhisthira. He was put into difficulty by injustice only, and the Battle of Kurukshetra was fought to counteract this injustice, just to counteract this injustice. Therefore he should not regret the great massacre. He, Bhishma, wanted to point out particularly that they were always protected by the Brahmins, the Lord, and religious principles. As long as they were protected by these three important items, which three important items? The Brahmins, the Lord, and religious principles. The Brahmins, the Lord, and religious principles. If one, as long as they were protected by these three important items, there was no cause of disappointment. Thus, Bhishma Dev encouraged Maharaj Yudhisthira to dissipate his despondency. As long as a person is fully in cooperation with the wishes of the Lord, guided by the bona fide Brahmins and Vaishnavas, and strictly following religious principles, one has no cause of despondency, however trying the circumstances of life, however trying all the circumstances, whatever difficulty we find ourselves within, as long as we have acted properly, we should accept those difficulties as Krishna's grace. So how do we know we have acted properly? First, in cooperation with the wishes of the Lord. So how do we know that, the wishes of the Lord? Shastra. Yes, but that comes next. Guided by the bona fide Brahmanas and Vaishnavas, Guru, Sadhu, Vaishnava. So the words of the Lord of the Bhagavad Gita, I've heard, or from listening to tapes, I see of Prabhupada that he takes the Bhagavad Gita and applies it in all his preaching to all circumstances. So one should know the Bhagavad Gita very carefully, very thoroughly, so well that he can apply it to circumstances, because this explains the Bhagavad Gita are the words of the Lord himself, Krishna Katha, in that sense. So that's the first way. The second, guided by the bona fide Brahmanas and Vaishnavas, the Diksha Gurus, Shiksha Gurus, and strictly following the religious principles. So we should know what is right and what is wrong. The religious principles are basically those that are in goodness. So if we're acting basically in goodness, in cooperation, in conjunction with the Lord's plans and desires and words, and under the guidance of the Vaishnavas, these three things are very valuable guidelines for knowing how to act, and they'll be explained further in text 14. So whatever the results are, if we've acted properly, okay, Krishna, I've done the best I can, now I have to be detached from the results. Ma paleshu gadachana. Bhishma, as one of the authorities in the line, wanted to impress this point upon the Pandavas. Now 14, where Bhishma Dev says, Sarvam kalakritam manye bhavatam chayarapriyam sapalo yadveshaloko vairi vaganavali. In my opinion, what has happened to you, this is all due to inevitable time. All this has happened due to the influence of time. Kala kritam, kala, time, the actions of time. Manye, I think all, sarvam, all this is happening by the actions of time. Under whose control? Bhavatam chayarapriyam sapalodyad vishel. Everyone is under time. It is not only you who is being controlled by time. Everyone in the material world, even the greatest controllers in the material world, are also under the control of time. So what is there to lament over? Vayariva ganavali. We are carried just as clouds are carried helplessly by the wind. We are all being pushed around by time. But ahankara vimudatma. Kartaham. I am the one who's doing everything. Actually, we're just being pushed around by time, like clouds are pushed around by the wind. An illusion, we're thinking we're doing everything, and therefore when something happens, results that we don't like, that are causes of misery, we must suffer because kartaham. I'm thinking that I'm the one doing it, so therefore the reactions come just to me. I have to suffer. Prabhupada's purport. There is control by time all over the space within the universe, as there is control by time all over the planets. No one is free from this. All the big gigantic planets, including the sun, are being controlled by the force of air, as the clouds are carried by the force of air. Similarly, the inevitable kala, or time, controls even the actions of the air and other elements. Everything, therefore, is controlled by the supreme kala, a forceful representative of the Lord within the material world. So everything he's saying right now, everything is controlled by time. You are helpless in time. So if you are helpless, how could you, you have to accept and not feel despondent. It is not caused by you. This is time's actions. This is providence. And ultimately, because kala is controlled by, it is a energy of the supersoul, ultimately everything is controlled by the supersoul. And ultimately, supersoul means Krishna. So nothing can happen without Krishna's grace behind it, without his willing it, without his sanctioning it. Nothing can happen. So therefore, one can only be peaceful in the world, in this world, if he knows, as Prabhupada called it, the peace formula, that Krishna is this powerful controller, Sarvaloka Maheshwaram, and he's also Suridam, Sarvabhutanam, and I am included amongst all the Sarvabhutanam. So he is also my well-wisher, my dear friend. He's Surit, he's right there in the heart. So my friend cannot actually wish anything bad for me, even though a circumstance may be arranged by him that is difficult for me. It is in my interest, ultimately. That faith, get from mum, knowing this, shantim richati. If one has that trust, only one can be peaceful in this world. Otherwise, the material world is so fashioned to break apart every attempt at our peace. We make so many attempts and all will fail. This is the nature of the material world. But if we have this type of internal peace, then we can be peaceful. It's peace that's independent of the external circumstances. Everything it's not in our control. It is happening by the control of kala, time. And which is a forceful representative of the Lord within the material world. What other word could you think of that would be appropriate to use instead of forceful to describe time?
Inexorable.
Yes? That's a good one. Another word?
Inevitable.
Yes, another one? Unstoppable. Forceful, but so forceful, it makes everything inevitable. It forces something to happen. It's forceful. It forces everything to happen. Thus, Yudhisthira should not be sorry for the inconceivable action of time. Everyone has to bear the actions and reactions of time as long as one is within the conditions of the material world. How does that make you feel? Everyone. That means everyone. We have to bear our karma. What happens to us by the combined effort of Krishna, time, our own reactions, karma. We have to bear it. What does that mean? Because there is also another word, at least in English, called unbearable. It means you can't bear it. You can't tolerate it. But here, We have to. What does that mean, actually, that you have to bear all these reactions? You have to accept. What does it mean that you have to accept? It means even if you don't want to accept, you have no choice. You can accept willingly, or you can accept unwillingly, but you're going to have to accept it. This is what reality means. It has its way of forcing itself upon us, whether we like it or not. So what Bhishma Dev is saying, you have to accept it, you have to tolerate it. Tams tatikshasva bharata. Sitos na, sukha dukha daha. Happiness, distress, winter, heat. What to do? The thing that you have to bear is the external occurrence. Because you can't do anything about it. But what you can change is how you react to it. And that's what the instruction is. You have to accept this. It isn't you who's done it. You accept that this is kala, this is karma, this is ultimately Krishna. Accept it. And if you trust Krishna that he has some plan, that it's ultimately helpful, then shanti, peaceful and happy. Otherwise, no question of being peaceful and happy in this world. Even Yudhisthira, because everyone has to bear the, it's not you, only you. Sometimes when something happens to us, oh, look what happened to me. But it's not only me who's suffering and is in this horrible condition of having to accept whatever happens to him. It's everyone. Everyone. And that's what he's going to say in the next verse. Everyone. Yes, we'll get to that soon. So Yudhisthira should not think that he had committed sins in his previous birth and he's suffering the consequences. Even the most pious has to suffer the condition of material nature. But a pious man, this is what a pious man does, is faithful to the Lord, for he is guided by the bona fide Brahmins and Vaishnavas following the religious principles. So we should accept, okay, Krishna, this is the blessing you've given me. This is the garland you happen to have placed around my neck at this point. It is a painful garland, but Hare Krishna. Your mercy, Krishna's mercy. These three guiding principles. So then, one can say, well, I'll do any foolish thing, and then what happens? Of course, we won't say, I'll do a foolish thing and then accept the result as Krishna's mercy. But I will do what I want to do. We'll say whimsical. We won't say our actions are whimsical, but I'll do what I want. And then I'll say, oh, Krishna's mercy. Some devotee is standing there minding his own business, and I'll say, Krishna's mercy, Prabhu. That kind of thing, not as gross as that, but that kind of thing happens all the time. We hurt another and we tell them, oh, it's Krishna's mercy. Huh? Uppercut Leela. That's an Aussieism. Uppercut Leela. Yes. So is that legitimate? No, because before we can say Krishna's mercy, there are some guidelines that dictate how we should act. Three guiding principles should be the aim of life. That means that if we are guided by these three things, we are doing well. And then whatever happens, we, with a clean heart, we can say Krishna's mercy. And what are those things? Faithful to the Lord, which includes Shastra. Guided by the bona fide Brahmins and Vaishnavas. Same points as in the 12th. And that means accepting the guidance. If we're not sure what to do, Or even when we are sure, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said to Sanatana Goswami when he said, Ke ami? When he said, who am I? He said, you know the answers to these questions. But it is the nature of a sadhu to ask just to confirm. So we may have our own realizations of how we should act, but it is the nature of a devotee to get them confirmed, what we feel. It's not that we are not allowed to feel or think what we should do, but we should get things confirmed by the guru, spiritual master, and Vaishnavas, and by the Shastra, and by religious principles, which I'm taking here. There may be other meanings of that. Religious principles basically mean acting in goodness, properly. Or, as we often say, sadhu, shastra and guru. But this adds the other one of religious principles. These three guiding principles should be the aim of life. One should not be disturbed by the tricks of eternal time. In other words, if something happens and we've acted properly, sometimes Maya will disturb our mind by saying, oh, it's me, it's my fault. And what will we be thinking of continuously? Me. Completely self-absorbed, which is another one of Maya's tricks. One should not be disturbed by the tricks of eternal time. One should act properly according to these guidelines, and then accept, if we've acted properly for Krishna, in Krishna's service, accept what happens as Krishna's arrangement and Krishna's mercy. Even the great controllers of the universe, Brahma, controller of the universe, Brahma is also under the control of time. Therefore, one should not grudge being controlled by time despite being a true follower of religious principle. So in my opinion, Bhishma said, Krishna could not convince Yudhisthira that he was blameless, but now Bhishma Dev is going to preach in this way. This is all due to inevitable time. It is not due to you. You are not the center of this. Time is the center, under whose control everyone and every planet is carried, just as clouds are carried by the wind. Should be faithful to the Lord, guided by the Brahmins and Vaishnavas. Then Bhishma spoke further. Oh, how wonderful! Yatra damasuto rajan garapani vikrodara Krishna vastri gandiva chappam surit Krishna tato vipad. How wonderful is the influence of inevitable time. Wonderful in the sense, how amazing, how powerful it is, how awe-inspiring it is. Because time had its way. It's so powerful, inevitable. When we say something is inevitable, what do we mean? When do we use something? We usually use it in the past tense. That was inevitable. When something's already happened, it's very easy to say that it was inevitable because it happened. And you can't stop it anymore because it happened. So when something has already happened, then it was inevitable. It had to happen. Inevitable means it had to happen. So time is inevitable. It makes actions within this world as inevitable, that they must have happened, as if they have already happened. It forces things in this way. So Bhishma Dev he's going to give an example of the power of time to show how powerful and forceful and inevitable time is. It is irreversible. Otherwise, how can there be reverses in the presence of King Yudhisthira, the son of the demigod controlling religion? How could Yudhisthira have suffered in this way? He's Dharmaraj. He's goodness personified practically. He whose enemy has never been born has suffered. How is that possible? To him, how could it happen? Good things happen to good people. And in the presence of not only him, the great fighter with a club, who is that? Bhim, unstoppable, so powerful, and yet so many reverses happened in his presence. And not only Bhim, but the great bowman Arjuna with his mighty, unstoppable weapon, Gandiva. And above all, the Lord, the direct well-wisher of the Pandavas, and still these horrible things have happened. Krishna, the all-controlling Supreme Personality of Godhead, and had already said, Bhishma already said that Bhishma knew who was standing in front of him, the all-powerful Lord. And in text 18 he says, Esha Vai Bhagavan Shakshad, pointing to Krishna. This is Bhagavan, directly the Lord. And still, these reverses happen to Yudhisthira. It's impossible, basically. The impossible happened. Prabhupada's purport. As far as the material or spiritual resources were required. So he's amazed that all this could happen. It's like if there's a billionaire, a person with $500 billion, and he's out there in begging in the street. You know, please, could you give me 1 rupee or 50s? A billionaire? How is that possible? This is even more extraordinary in the presence of Krishna, in the presence of Arjuna, in the presence of Bhim, and to the people who are personified goodness. This is the actions of inevitable time. You can't ask why has this happened and expect an answer that makes sense a lot of the time. How could this possibly have happened? Or the other comment, it's not fair. There is one time, one of Prabhupada's very wonderful disciples, Guru Gauranga. Raise your hand if you know Guru Gauranga. He went to law school after a while. And he told me this story that one, it's true. In the class, there was an argument going on between a very big law professor and some of the students. The law professor was saying, it's like this and like this. And the students were saying, no, it couldn't be like that and like that and like that. This little story may be one. It has a Western... I shouldn't even tell it now that I think about it. I'm not going to tell it. All right, Krishna. It isn't too late. Just watch. It's inevitable that I'm not going to tell it now. I'll tell you later. Don't worry. I realized it's a little bit risque, so I shouldn't. And ask all the Matajis to leave and ask everyone under 45 to leave. Now I've really made everyone's attention come up. Everyone who is sleeping is now wide awake. Okay. Everyone, chant Hare Krishna. So, as far as the material or spiritual resources were required, there was no scarcity in the case of the Pandavas. Materially, they were well equipped because two great warriors, namely Bhim and Arjuna, were there. Spiritually, the king himself was the symbol of religion. And above all of them, the personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna, was personally concerned with their welfare as the well-wisher. And yet, there were so many reverses on the side of the Pandavas. Despite the power of pious acts, the power of personalities, the power of expert management, and power of weapons under the direct supervision of Lord Krishna, the Pandavas suffered so many practical reverses again and again and again, which can only be explained as due to the influence of Kala inevitable time. And now Prabhupada says in the next line something that's very important for us to notice. Kala is identical with the Lord Himself. So there is a geometrical axiom that things equal to the same things are equal to each other. So if Krishna or the Lord Himself is equal to Kala, and Kala is the cause, so what is ultimately causing everything? Again, who can we complain to? Only Krishna. And He's Suridam. Surit. And look what, in this verse even, Surit Krishna, Tato Vipad. Your dearest friend, Surit. Not only Saka, but dear, dear friend. Heartfelt friend. So what can one say when one accepts that Krishna is God? How can one really ultimately complain except to let off some pressure in one's own mind sometimes when things are difficult? Kala is identical with the Lord Himself, and therefore the influence of Kala indicates the inexplicable, the ununderstandable wish of the Lord Himself. There is nothing to be lamented when a matter is beyond the control of any human being. So therefore we say, Krishna's mercy, Prabhu. But if we take a stick and hit someone, that person says, Krishna's mercy. But you, if you have not acted purely under the directions of Guru, Sadhu, religious principles, and in compliance with the will of Krishna, you will get a reaction for that. He may say Krishna's mercy, but if you have not acted instrumentally to Krishna due to false ego on your own part, you will get reactions for that. The pure devotee may see Krishna's mercy in it, but you will get reactions if you have improperly wielded the stick. So although everything may be Krishna's mercy ultimately, every person in that chain of Krishna's mercy may not be acting as Krishna's representative because of false ego. And that is also important to remember. There is nothing to be lamented when a matter is beyond the control of. So the result caused by time is equal to Krishna's will. In fact, he says, what's the progression of these two verses? So he's saying, how wonderful this is, that this has happened to you in the presence of these powerful forces that should have been able to stop it. And therefore, it must be inevitable time. And then in the next verse, O King, O Nahiyas Shikahi Chitrajan, Pumam Veda Viditsitam, Yaj vigyasayo yukta muyanti kavyopihi. Inexplicable will of the Lord. Inexplicable means you can't say anything about it. And why? Because it's beyond our comprehension why Krishna does what he does. O King, no one can know the plan of the Lord Sri Krishna. And it's interesting to note that before Bhishma Dev is speaking, Krishna is bowing down to Bhishma Dev. These instructions are fully sanctioned by Krishna. No one can know the plan of the Lord, Sri Krishna. Even though great philosophers inquire exhaustively, they are bewildered. You may say, I'm going to figure out what Krishna has in mind. But no one can actually understand it in full. Even the greatest of philosophers cannot understand. We are forced, ultimately, to do two things. The first is offer our humble obeisances to reality, Krishna's will, and accept it. And then we have to do something else, too. And that will be explained in the next verse. But before, and don't look ahead, before we get to that, there is an interesting comment that Srila Swami makes about the 16th verse. Nahi yasya kahi chit rajan. Pumam Veda. Veda means no. No person can understand the plan of the Lord. But who did? Where is the O King? Where is the Lord in this verse? The word, the Lord, in this Sanskrit. Huh? Rajan means the O King. He's talking to Yudhisthira. Asya, his. Sridhar Swami comments on Bhagavatam 1.9.16, this verse, saying that Bhishma points his finger at Krishna, saying, Asya, his. No one can understand the plan, his plan, Krishna's plan, him, that one. That naughty boy. He's the Lord. No one, even if the greatest sages inquire about it exhaustively, no one can actually understand. Because he's the only one who knows everything. We just get a part of reality, a small part. And within that small part of reality, we try to judge right and wrong, this is good and bad, by our own powers. It's actually quite foolish. He's the only one, because he knows everything. Not even Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva know everything, what to speak of us. So how tiny and insignificant we are, and yet how quick we are to pass judgment. Oh, this is fortunate, this is unfortunate, this is good, this is bad. No one can actually say that. Only Krishna, because he's the only one who knows, has all the facts. So he's the only one who can pass judgment. The bewilderment, Prabhupada explains in his purport, of Maharaj Yudhisthira over his past sinful acts and the resultant sufferings, etc., is completely negated by the great authority Bhishma, one of the 12 authorized persons. Interesting, when you compare Bhishma's instructions to Krishna's instructions before the battle of Kurukshetra to Arjuna. Arjuna was fearing. What was he fearing? So many people will be killed and I don't want the reactions to it. And ultimately, what was Krishna's instruction?
Any weaknesses of heart.
Okay, but past those, towards the end, towards very close to the end. Sanskrit, please. Sanskrit. Oh, this one you should know. You know it. Mame kam sharanam. Aham tvam sarva papabhyo. I'll protect you from all reactions. Just surrender to me. So then the battle is fought. Everyone is surrendered. Arjuna is surrendered. Yudhisthira, we accept, was surrendered to Krishna's will. So in retrospect, were there any reactions? No, so after the sins, quote, sins have been committed. Now, the after the war Bhagavad Gita is being spoken, saying there were no sinful reactions because you were surrendered. So stop lamenting. Don't lament about what's going to happen. No, surrender. But don't also surrender and then don't lament about what did happen. So Bhishma, so this is one of the great authorized 12 authorized Mahajans. Bhishma wanted to impress upon Maharaj Yudhisthira that since time immemorial, no one, including such demigods as Shiva and Brahma, could ascertain the real plan of the Lord. So what can we understand about it? It is useless also to inquire about it. Even the exhaustive philosophical inquiries of sages cannot ascertain the plan of the Lord. The best policy is to simply to abide by the orders of the Lord without argument. The sufferings of the Pandavas were never due to their past deeds. The Lord had to execute the plan of establishing the kingdom of virtue, and therefore his own devotees suffered temporarily in order to establish the conquest of virtue. What does virtue mean? Goodness. His desire. Bhishma Dev was certainly satisfied by seeing the triumph of virtue, and he was glad to see King Yudhisthira on the throne, although he himself fought against him. Even a great fighter like Bhishma could not win the battle of Kurukshetra, because the Lord wanted to show that vice cannot conquer virtue, regardless of who tries to execute it. Bhishma Dev was a great devotee of the Lord, but he chose to fight against the Pandavas by the will of the Lord, because the Lord wanted to show that a fighter like Bhishma cannot win on the wrong side. So, of course, we can discuss these points, and perhaps we will for quite a long time, but I wanted to read the next verse. So everything is under the will of the Lord. There's not very much we can know, even in spreading Krishna consciousness. Say there is, if one looks at Kali Yuga, and this will come up later in the question of why, and it came up already, someone already brought it up, why didn't Krishna arrange, why didn't Maharaj Prickett kill Kali? He met him. If he would have just killed him right there, no, that's not where. Where does it come up? Yeah, it came up in regard to. Yes, no, it was. Anyway, it came up with Asatama, but it comes up with Maharaj Prickett too. Why didn't he just kill Kali? Because ultimately, Kali made the quarrel, his curse take place, yes? And he died, and that allowed Kali to enter and take over the whole world. And look at Kali now. This is Kali's kingdom we're living in, practically. Kali rules here. If Maharaj Prickett would have just killed him, then Maharaj Prickett would have ruled, Kali would have been finished, and Kali would never have entered. Yes? It would have been good, right? But why didn't he do that? Why didn't Krishna inspire him to do that? That's true, but Kali has to come. This is the point. Kali Yuga has to come. There is no avoiding it. It's just the way, the cycle of things that have to be. It's the accumulation of the sinful reactions that it has to come. Kali has to come. It has to degrade. People have to try their darndest to enjoy in any way they want, and they have to suffer. They have to suffer. This is Kali Yuga. But Kali couldn't come in Maharaj Prickett's presence because he was a powerful king and he would not tolerate Kali doing anything. So therefore an arrangement had to be made for Maharaj Prickett to leave. And Krishna wanted the Bhagavatam to be spoken and so many other things. Krishna makes plans that are they accomplish many things all at one time. So aside from that point, considering that Krishna's will is inevitable and we can only know a small part of what reality is, how should we react? What should we do? Because sometimes we can get despondent, thinking, well, if everything is inevitable, get completely deterministic, then why should I bother acting? I can't accomplish anything. I can't do anything. I can't do any service even, because everything is inevitable and determined by Krishna's will. unstoppable, inevitable time. So one can get hopeless and despondent. Why even make an effort? So the next verse really answers the question of considering all these things. What should we do practically? How we should act? Tasmaridam daivatantram vyavasa varatasabha tasyanu vihito natta natapahi prajaprabhu. So Bhishma says to Yudhisthira Maharaj, O best amongst the descendants of Bharata, Yudhisthira, I maintain, therefore, that all this is within the plan of the Lord. Accepting the inconceivable plan of the Lord, you must follow it. And part of that following it is that you have to know your part in the plan of the Lord and do your duty. You are now the appointed administrative head, and my Lord, you should now take care of those subjects who are now rendered helpless. They are anatta. They are orphans. They don't have a king. They don't have a protector. They don't have a lord. You do your duty. By Krishna's arrangement, you are the king. Now you do your duty as king and protect all the citizens. They are suffering without your protection. Do your duty. Prabhupada's purport. The popular saying is that a housewife teaches the daughter-in-law by teaching the daughter. What does that mean? It has a cultural base to it. What does that mean? Well, that's this housewife. Because in the Vedic culture, the daughter-in-law comes and lives with the in-law's family, her husband's family. She's already completely uncomfortable because, she's in a different house, different family, different customs, and then there's this very mother-in-law figure there. So he doesn't want to make her more uncomfortable. I'm giving purports, as you tell. Yeah. Why don't you do it like this? You should do it like this. This is the proper way to do things. You put this much salt in. You clean in this way. You do this, you do that. She tells it to the daughter, and the daughter-in-law hears it, and she learns what to do without going through the trauma of having to be chastised and always instructed and telling everything that you're doing is wrong. Yes? That's the system. The popular saying is that a housewife teaches a daughter-in-law by teaching the daughter. Similarly, the Lord teaches the world by teaching the devotee. The devotee does not have to learn anything new from the Lord because the Lord teaches the sincere devotee always from within. What verse? Say it loudly. Yes? Whenever, therefore, a show is made to teach a devotee, as in the case of the teachings of Bhagavad Gita, it is for teaching the less intelligent men. A devotee's duty, therefore, is to ungrudgingly accept tribulations from the Lord as a benediction. That's why I always say, we are aspiring devotees. That's you're liberated, and that's what a devotee is. If a person does that, if an aspiring devotee has so much depth of aspiration that he can do that, he's actually a devotee of Vaishnava, and he's liberated. Jivati o mukti pade sadaya bhakti. See Krishna's hand. Okay, Krishna, you want this to happen to me? Hare Krishna. Okay, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. The Pandavas were advised by Bhishma Dev to accept the responsibility of administration without hesitation. The poor subjects were without protection due to the battle of Kurukshetra, and they were awaiting the assumption of power by Maharaj Yudhisthira. A pure devotee of the Lord accepts tribulation as favors from the Lord. He does his duty, and whatever happens that is uncomfortable, that comes to him, or even difficult or tribulations, he accepts that as Krishna's hand and Krishna's mercy. Since the Lord is absolute, there is no mundane difference between the two. But this is not cheap, easy stuff. This is really at the heart of Krishna consciousness and devotional. Only exalted persons can do it. So we should aspire and try very hard to be exalted person. To think Krishna. Maharaj Prickett actually did it. He was cursed. He said, okay. Chitraketu, okay. Priyavrata. He didn't want to reign. Okay. Now, theoretically, I was supposed to go up to 24. But it's already late and a fast day. Thank you, brother. Thank you. Questions? Comments? First of all, not without Krishna's sanction. Krishna can sanction. Second of all, there's a whole explanation of the nature of the material world is you can't do everything perfectly, and it catches you in the end. As King Nriga, for example, ended up a lizard, although he was incredibly pious. You can't do everything perfectly. It's the very nature of the material world. I can't remember where this point is discussed. I think Jiva Goswami discusses it somewhere, and he thereby finds fault. See, because the Kama Mamangsa philosophy is you just keep doing pious deeds, and you accrue so much piety, billions and billions and billions and billions of years worth on the heavenly planet, that you never get around to the suffering of your bad karma. That's basically the idea. You just keep putting more money in the bank account, the pious bank account, but it can't work like that. The very nature of the material world forces, at some time or another, it forces suffering upon you. Prabhu, I'm sorry.
I was thinking in one instance in his kind, so he's complained.
Sometimes devotees complain. What is that? And from now on, we have someone to complain to. Vrajabihari. Everyone, if you have anything's wrong, just complain to Vrajabihari. No problem. Yes?
You know the fact that, so it looks like the Lord is quite this theme, because just like a garden, if you have never seen.
And you won't. And therefore you complain.
Yeah. So,
so how should one take it?
We should just accept it. We should have the overall picture.
And be detached about our work, dutifully do our work, and not be attached to the result. I've planted seeds in my garden, and they must grow up in my garden. Otherwise, it's not fair. Yes. It's not fair. Yes. Good comment. Any other questions or comments? Yes. Yes. Krishna has, he's not authorized. In other words, there are billions of people in this world doing things that aren't Krishna's will, but are sanctioned by Krishna. So it's like that. When something happens, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's Krishna's will on one level, even though it is Krishna's will on another level, maybe, on a bigger level. But it's not Krishna's will, but yet it's happening by Krishna's grace nevertheless. They're independent. So he says, okay, you want to touch the fire? Touch it, see what happens. It's not Krishna's desire that the people touch fire and get burnt. Text 9. Who's the Vasu? Bhishma's one. Any others? Is that in the Bhagavad Gita?
are the Vasus of Maruts. There's Maruts, but not Vasus. No, but it's but at least you know the best. This is it's listed somewhere. If someone could type it in, and yes, it's already being typed in. And there are 8 Vasus. Oh yes. Yes, I remember that. I remember that, reading that. That had everyone astounded in the 60s even. Because once, because the rest of the story isn't there. So if we have this, we could ask our Madhav Maharaj to take out that big book and find out the circumstances surrounding his falling into a well. Krishna's well? As well. Krishna as well?
Oh. Yes, follow the will of Krishna.
Krishna's well. Okay, I get it. Can anyone do better than that one? with that? Sorry, it is quite good. Yes. Did you want to add something to that?
Yes, there's another Pali belief, go out of the world.
Yes. That's also Mahabharati. It's a story that he gave the world to him in charity. Just like this happens very often. The great kings, they accept that the world actually belongs to the Brahmins. So if there's a sacrifice, and Lord Ramachandra is said to have done this, and it's in the 9th canto. He gives everything to the Brahmins, and then they give it back to him. But instead of giving it back to him, Kasyapa Muni told him to go. And where could he go, after all? I don't know that story. It's there, though. It's another one for the book. Any other? Do you have a question? Well, there's 2 questions that come up. I'll add another question to that one. One is, in the verse Tateyanu Kampamsu Samikshamano, we see Krishna, but also we see our misdeeds in it. When suffering comes, we see that Krishna has kindly given this to me, minimizing what I truly deserve. So there's no contradiction between the two. We see Krishna using our karma to purify us and to bring us closer to him, and therefore it's his mercy. But it's not happening to everyone else, it's only happening to me. So it has something to do with what I've done. By the way, before I forget, Mataji brought some Charanamrita from the bathing of Krishna Balaram. So don't leave. A few devotees already left. I'm getting some. So please don't leave. It's probably a little more than I could drink. Okay, there you go. At least I can. If anyone wants any, and if anyone doesn't want any, they don't have to take it. But thank you. Yes. So that's how to see that. I forgot the other part of what. Excuse me? You could see it as Krishna. Yeah, it's ultimately it's Krishna bringing me towards him. But again, this consciousness is not cheap. It's purchased at a very dear price, full surrender. Oh yes, how do you know if it's the Lord's mercy or not? Just like, say, someone hurts their eye, or their eye is going bad. So how do they know whether they should just let it go bad or see the doctor? Because you can take it to that kind of extreme. Well, it's happening, therefore it's inevitable. Yes. So we don't do that. We have to understand what our duty is. We take example and we take consultation from others, from the Brahmins and Vaishnavas. But a death will have tried And then if our eye goes bad despite all our attempts, then we can say, oh, Krishna's mercy, but we've tried. One time, there was a devotee named Prabhanu who and his wife had a son who was born with a hole in his heart. And there was an operation that they could have there was some chance of it curing the problem. So they asked Prabhupada, what should we do? It's an expensive operation. Should we have the operation for the child or not? Because the child was only a few months old. So what did Prabhupada answer? What do you think Prabhupada answered? What do you think he answered? What do you think? What do you think? It's hard to know. He said, you know the philosophy. You decide what to do. There's many reasons for that answer, but just imagine if he said yes, and then the person said, but I don't have any money. Or if he said no, then sometime they may blame Prabhupada. So it's very tricky to be in that position. Also, this was my analysis. So he did end up knowing the philosophy. He did have the operation, and the child left this world. So at least he had the assurance of trying his best, and he knew. Otherwise, he might have been thinking, only if, and what happened if. He tried his best. He decided what his duty was. And his duty was, this is my son, he's under my protection, I have to do everything. This is what he decided his duty was. I had to do everything in my power to save this child's life. He's under my care. And then whatever happens is Krishna's mercy. It's Krishna. But yet we see that many people do. So knowing how deep, it depends on the depth of one's faith. So at that time he was a young devotee. Then what's the verse say? Okay, so what is the past misdeeds? What does that mean? It means karma. Because it's different ways to look at and say the same thing. Because it's not your karma, because Krishna is giving it to you. But you could also say, well, it has something to do with my karma, even though Krishna is giving it to me. Okay. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Bhishma Dev, Yudhisthira, Pandavas, Sri Krishna ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaura Bhaktivinoda ki jai. Yes, thank you. But louder. Sri Balarama ki jai. Hari Bol. Jai. Prabhu, do you have a spoon of some sort in your room? So Krishna uses your karma to purify you. See, because we have our karma. We have our parabdha karma. You have to tolerate the suffering and use it to come closer to Krishna. Yes. Yes. But, yes. Yes. But it's also ultimately... Do you want it? Well, but also, see, there's an element of Krishna in it as well. It's not only a destiny, because say if you have... Do you want a little bit or... Somewhere in between. Thank you very much, Mataji. No, I'm okay. Well, there you go. You want more ghee? Yeah, put it down though, and I'll see if I can get. Tell me when to stop. Okay? Yeah. Yes. Yes. But I, but, huh? Yes, what people would say. No, that's what people would say. But also Prabhupada told me that a devotee is generally transcendental. No, but is transcendental, but he generally acts in the mode of goodness. So that's how I think in terms of what would be a good thing to do. So I would tend, and then another one time the devotees in Melbourne, there was some lady at the Hare Krishna, a building was on fire. Yeah, so Prabhupada was so happy. So what are you going to do? You're going to just let them die? That's not also good for consciousness. Your consciousness, you become hard-hearted. Depends on, no, I don't believe it. Mataji. Ghee. And then I can take some back. But no, you take it. You cough, yeah? Oh, so much ghee came to you. I don't want to make this just an export business. Just distribute and not take for myself.